Hi guys, my name is Richard, alcoholic. Woo, all the eyes are on me now, right now. Oh, thank you, Gabby, for being my 10-minute. That was awesome. You killed it. You killed it. To the young lady that identified under 30, welcome. You know, and I hope you heard something, you know, and keep coming back. It's amazing to be sober today and living this life, you know, this new way of living today, you know. I would have never imagined today that I would be happy, you know, like overall happy. There's moments, right? There's moments of the sadness and frustration and you know, and but I'm overall happy. I wake up every morning with not the urge of drinking, you know. I'm not waking up in the morning with shame and guilt. What did I do last night, you know? What happened, you know? Who's this person next to me? Oh, shoot. Where am I? What city am I in? You know, it's not like that today. That's awesome. You know, I'm going to share a little bit of how I was, what happened, and how things are now. My sobriety date is July 14, 2024. Sponsor has a sponsor, and I'm glad, and I have a home group, you know, and I didn't understand what a home group meant until I came here, you know. You guys are my family, you know. I'm home, you know. You guys hold me accountable, you know. When I'm having a little emotional day or a little bad, you know, we have our days. You guys notice that? Hey, you okay, Richard? Is everything okay? Hey, Emmy, I'm fine. You don't look fine, you know. You don't look fine, you know. But that shows you that you guys notice and care, you know. I grew up in LA. I grew up with a single parent. My grandmother raised me from birth. Both my parents are alcoholics, and never got to know my dad. So my mom wasn't part of my life in the early part of my childhood. So it was just me and grandma was my mother. I was born in General Hospital in downtown LA, and my mom tells me this story. When I was born, they took mom in the psych ward, you know. It's wild because, you know, my mom was dealing with her own demons and stuff, you know. And I, at that time, I don't see things like that. Grandma was very loving. I was raised as an only child, even though I have siblings. But I got all the attention, and that's what I love. I love attention. I might act like I don't like the attention, but I love attention. I'm the kid that gets, like, I come to class, and I'm disruptive, and I can't stay still, and the teacher puts in the corner, and I'm just like, okay. And I'm trying to get attention as the class is going on, you know? But from the very start, I always felt singled out, different, you know? I didn't understand why. I really didn't understand why. Why? You know, what is it? What? I don't understand what I'm doing wrong, you know? And, growing up in the household, so there was a lot of love. I mean, grandma gave me a lot of love. My grandma was just, like, she loved having parties at the house and people over, and she would dress up really nice, and her friends dressing up nice, drinking cognac, Remy Martin, and brandy, and there was never beer. Beer never existed, right? It was always like these drinks, these fancy drinks and stuff, and the fancy cigarettes, right? The Saratogas and Virginia Slims used to smoke. And, you know, she used to smoke these cigarettes, and I go, Mom, but she didn't smoke. She just acted like she smoked, so it was all a show, right? You know, again, like the kid that can't stay still will go into the living room and want to know what's going on here. And she told me, get back in the room, you know, get back in the room. And I just wanted to be part of it, you know. My grandma loved to party, you know, and it was glamorized in my eyes. It looked fun, you know. Grandma did the best as she could, you know. We moved a lot. Grandma didn't have like a job, you know. She just hustled. Never understood what she did for work, to be honest. We grew up with government assistance like welfare and food stamps and all of that. And you know, my grandma had this, like, I don't want nobody to know that we're living off of welfare. So we would go to the next town or city, right, and buy our groceries there because she didn't want none of the neighbors to know that she was buying her groceries with food stamps. It was embarrassing, right? This facade that we had money or something. Grandma didn't really grasp the English language, so at a very young age, I was the translator. I was a translator. Whenever grandma needed papers filled out and they were in English, I filled them out. And I'm like 7, 8 years old doing this, you know? Grandma is from Cuba. She came to America in the 60s. And I wasn't allowed to complain about anything because she's like, you know what I did to come to this country, Ricky? Do you know what I had to do? I had to leave my whole family and come to this country, right? You know, so I had no right to complain, you know. I will complain. I will come home because the kids will pick on me because I'm awkward. I'm really awkward. I want attention. I'm a little eccentric. And I will get picked on by the bigger kids. And I will come crying, Mom, they hit me and they're picking on me. They put orange juice in my hair. And she's like, don't come crying. You go and fight them. You know, the next day I'll go fight them and I will get in trouble. And they will call grandma, and here she has to show up and meet up with the principal. And she's like, what the hell's wrong with you? And I'm like, you told me to defend myself, you know? Like, I don't understand what I'm doing wrong, you know? She was one of a kind. I mean, I just love my grandma so much, you know? She's there. She's a big part of my life, you know? She raised me. She's the only parent I knew, you know? Because of the economic instability and the moving and switching schools, the switching schools sucked because once I got comfortable with that group of kids, right, my little nerdy friends or eccentric friends, I had to move again from one, you know, to another school, you know. So we moved all over Los Angeles and stuff. And I remember, when I get older, I'm going to get a job and I'm going to be the head of household and I'm going to make sure that we have enough money so that way we don't have to move, you know. Stability. All my friends that I was attracted to were the friends that had mom and dad, that had dinner time on the table. I was attracted to that. You know, I would just run into their houses and I'd be like, my mom gave me permission to spend the night. No, she did not, you know? So I would stay there, you know? Because I didn't know what a family structure was because, you know, grandma was having fun. She loved having boyfriends, you know? She loved having, you know, and she would go out. She would go out and she'll turn on the TV and she's like, don't open the door. I'll be back later, you know? And on a Saturday night, you know, alone in the house, And I'm freaking, I'm calm, and then I start to freak out because what's on Saturday nights is Cops and America Most Wanted. And when that shit's on, I'm closing my windows, looking out the window, because I think someone's going to break into the house and get me. So I am terrified, waiting for mom to come through the door, you know, and she finally comes in at 2 in the morning, and she's like, what the hell, you know, like, why are you still awake, you know? You know, we didn't believe in babysitters, you know? This is the 90s, okay? You know? you know? And this is normal to me. This is normal upbringing to me, right? This is normal. And there were things that happened in the household that my mind would block out, you know? There was abuse going on, you know? And I blocked it out of my mind, you know? But it happened, you know? So... And I share a little bit about that, you know, because it's like, as a man, we're not allowed to talk about these things. But yeah, there was some sexual abuse, you know, but it was never talked about. It was never talked about in the household. You know, she found out and it got taken care of and we never talked about it, you know. And that's how things were. We didn't talk about our feelings. We did it. You know, it was just different, you know. I had these behavior problems and a lot of bedwetting and wetting in the classroom and it was embarrassing, right? And I don't know what's going on, but, you know, so I'm carrying all this anxiety and this fear for whatever reason. And I don't remember when I had my first drink, but when I did, I just remember feeling like, oh, this feels good. You know, I want more of this, you know, it must have been like 13 or 14 or something. You know, and it was these kids, you know, we were drinking, we're drinking beer. It was like Mickey's or something. It was Mickey's or King Cobra. I forget what it was, you know, but I remember getting buzzed and it felt good, you know, I found my crowd again, you know, I'm in middle school. I found my crowd again. They all come from broken homes. They were skaters. They were into rock music and we were not part of the cool kids. We were not part of the nerds. It was just our own little group of kids that were misfits and stuff. So we would go to like ditch parties and hang out and I just felt a part of, you know, because that's why all I wanted was to be a part of, you know, and all these teachers and coaches would tell me, you have so much potential, just apply it, right? You can do so well playing basketball. You can do so well if you stay in school and just do your homework, right? Because I don't like doing homework. I don't listen, right? you know, and I can get by taking a test and do just, I can just hang on, right? But I don't know. I don't know if I did pay attention in school, if I did join the sports, if I did have the parents, if I was raised in the right side of the city, that I would have not been alcoholic. I think I was just, I've been this way this whole time, even before the drink, you know, because my mind is doing this the whole time, right? I'm daydreaming and I don't feel connected, you know, but once I have that, I've arrived. I'm connected with everybody, you know. Yeah, and that's pretty much, and it just keeps going, At 15 or 16 years old, I went to MacArthur Park and I got a fake ID, and went to clubs and got liquor, I didn't have to rely on anybody, you know, so I had to get my liquor. Especially going to clubs was so much fun. So back in the 90s, and I was already 6'2", 200 pounds, so I just had to just dress like an adult, right? And a chameleon. I'm a chameleon. Oh, my God. I can act like an adult. I can make you believe that I'm 19 or 21 or 22. I can make you believe that I'm in college. I can do that. We're clever alcoholics. We're pretty smart. You know, we can talk our ways out of anything, you know, and we can convince anybody of anything, right? And we're good manipulators. I used to go to this one club called Florentine Gardens in Hollywood, and you had to dress up, and stuff. I loved it. I loved it. I mean, I loved the attention, too, you know, from everybody and stuff. And then there was this other one, the Arena. Oh, my God, the Arena was, like, all ages. They had drag shows. They had, like, house music. Oh, my God, it was amazing, you know, and there was a little bit of everything in the bathroom going on, and it was wild, man. This is how I want to live my life for the rest of the years to come, you know. The party scene, man. The party scene, you know, and I just love live entertainment, parties and shows. We'll get on the bus and go to like different places and see live bands play and sneak in and all that. It was fun. It was really fun. High school, it was such a blur. I don't remember really much high school. I wasn't really there. I wasn't present. I know, and I have a report card that showed up to the house, and it was just all F's and D's because I was never there. I think the only class I showed up for was the one before homeroom, and then after homeroom, I ditched, you know? I think it was like PE or something, so that was easy. You know what I mean? But right next to the school was a park, and that's where we'd be chilling at until 1:30, you know? Or go to someone's house, you know, and that's how it was. At 17, I should be a junior, but I'm still a freshman, and my grandma decides to move us from LA all the way to Van Nuys, thinking that if we move, that I was going to be better, that I was going to do better, right? Just do better, just not hang out with the same kids, and maybe slow down on the alcohol, well, not slow down, but stop the alcohol and the stuff that I was doing on the side, right? And then I just, within a day or two, I found another crowd, you know, and it was just the same thing. Another continuation, another spree, another group of friends, and let's go, let's party, right? At 18 years old, you know, I'm exiting out of the government assistance, so now, like, we really do need money, and I had to contribute financially, so I had no problem getting a job and all that, so I love earning a paycheck, I love working, and then on top of that, I had this moment where I was like, okay, maybe I'm drinking a little bit too much, I need to slow down a little bit, so I would just drink at night before bed, and then go to work the next day, right? You know, and I was trying to finish my classes to get, like, a high school diploma, so I was doing that at night. So by the time I was like 19, almost 20, I finished all my credits and was able to get a high school diploma. And it felt like a big accomplishment, you know, for me. Same thing at work. Work was the same thing. A group of guys that we used to party with and hang out and just pay the rent and make sure that I contribute to the bills and all of that. My first DUI, I love getting behind the wheel. I love getting behind the wheel under the influence, right? So my first DUI was at 18 years old, so I came to you guys, right, with a court card, you know? And I wasn't listening. I was sitting in the back and just trying to get my card signed, and then was not paying attention to none of this. You know, what you guys were talking about, you know? I didn't want to quit. Second DUI happened when I was like 24. Came back again. Same thing. I would show up drunk, not paying attention, and get that court card signed. And still, you know. After that, yeah, in all these DUIs were not because I just got stopped. I crashed other people. I crashed into other cars. So I have no regard for anyone's safety, right? And this is what I would do. I would get into a car accident with another car, injure that person, and then I would manipulate the story saying that that person got into my lane, and I try to hire a lawyer and try to sue them. Because I'm a manipulator. I want to get what's mine, right? Without any regard that that person's life almost ended because of my actions, right? I'm not even looking at my actions, right? So see, maybe I can get some money out of the lawsuit and, you know, give me some pain pill, some painkillers too, because my back hurts and I will fake it. I will fake it. Give it to me, you know? And then a few weeks later, the lawyer would just drop the case, you know? But at least I got something out of it, right? That's who I am. I'm a taker. I'm a manipulator. I'm a liar. But no regard thinking about the other person who was in the hospital for a month with broken bones. My car was on top of her Civic. I had an SUV and her car was under me. I didn't care at all. Same thing happened. My third accident, I T-boned a car, and I did the same thing again, you know? I T-boned a car, and I blamed it on the other person, and I did the same thing, and I had no regard for the other person that I injured. And that's the type of alcoholic I am. I don't care. I don't. I simply don't. I never fully conceived within myself that I was an alcoholic. To me, the alcoholic was the person that was pushing a cart under the bridge. And that's not me. I just like to drink and things get carried away. You know, that's all it was. That wasn't, because I didn't lose it all. You know, I will lose a job and then I will get another one. I was very convincing, right? I would convince and I would smile and I would and make it convinced that I won't do it again. I've been doing this my whole life. My grandmother gave me attention. I got away with everything. Everything I told her, she believed. And she would back me up in my lies. So I apply that in every relationship, in every encounter with anybody. You know, so I didn't lose anything. And I wasn't married, I didn't have any kids. I never lost anything, you know? And it's almost in a way like I had a reason why to do it too, on top of that. Well, don't you know I was abandoned? My parents were not around. I wasn't raised by my parents. My siblings were split all over. They're everywhere, all over the world. I don't even know my siblings. You know, I got picked on. Don't you know what I've been through? You know, so I justify my actions, right, under alcohol, under everything, right, that I do. I'm not honest, so I'm not honest with myself that I'm an alcoholic. You know. So we're in the valley, and then you know. That third accident, I ended up we ended up getting kicked out of that house we were renting, and you know, grandma was staying with. Okay, and this is a funny story actually. My mom comes back in the picture. This is maybe like 2000. She comes back in the picture. She comes out of prison and she has a year of sobriety. She has a year of sobriety, right? She's back in my life, and I don't want her in my life. You're just gonna come in and be my mom out of all these years? No, you know. But yeah, she's starting her journey in recovery, you know, and. She was coming back around, you know, little by little. So in the valley, yeah, we lost a house, you know, obviously because I lost a job, got into a car accident, and I wouldn't stop after that, you know. Within 2 weeks, because I was in the hospital as well, too, and when I was released, I was still back at it again, you know. I was not going to stop, even though that my actions were pretty bad, or pretty serious, you know. And I'm only pausing because I'm like, it's playing right now. It's playing so loudly right now. So we made a decision. We made a decision to move to Lancaster in 2008, thinking that if I've changed my environment completely again, and this time around I can rent another house with the disability check that I'm getting, right? And and grandma's Social Security, we can rent something, and then things can probably change, because deep down inside I did want to do better. You know, I did want to do better, but I wasn't ready to give it up, right? And again, within 2-3 days, I met another person in the crowd. I met another person on Craigslist, and that was fun. That was fun. I'm not gonna lie, it was fun. You know, and you just party all over, you know. And now we're up days, right? Party and stuff, and it was just one of those. Yeah, it's just crazy, man. It's just wild, man. It's wild. But I really wanted to do better this time, you know. After the government checks ran out, I decided to go back to school. At this time, I'm getting mental health help because I'm losing my mind because I am partying a lot. I'm not sleeping and having all these episodes, right? So I'm seeing the doctor and they have this thing where they were like, yeah, it was through Mental Health of America. And they were like, if you go to school, you know, we'll pay for it. Da, da, da. And I was like, okay, let me do a little bit of EMT maybe, you know, and didn't like that. And then I tried medical assisting. And I did okay with that. I'm good with needles. I can be I'm a good phlebotomist. I found that out. Easy class. Easy class, right? So I finished the class and I got a little job at urgent care here in East Palmdale. And I was doing okay. I was just thinking. I was just sticking to beer, this time. I was just beer, you know. Right before I go to sleep, right. I was doing okay. It was manageable, you know. Now I'm bringing some money into the household and things they're okay right now. And I get a job at a laboratory in Burbank, and I'm doing this commute back and forth, and I'm really really focused on that because I did promise to myself that I was not going to fuck it up again. I did okay for a few months, you know. But that job really, really sustained us, you know. And that stability that I was craving, you know. My grandma doesn't have to worry about but money, you know. So, And then little by little, I go back to my old ways, and I'm trying to manipulate and manage and lie and hide it and convince you that I'm not under the influence and da-da-da-da-da and mouthwash and cologne and change of clothes and eye drops, and I'm just all over again, you know. But I'm a good worker, you know. I'll do whatever it takes to get that check, you know. Oh God, okay. Again, I'm not fully ready to stop. I'm not fully ready to quit, you know. And things get dark again. You know, they get dark again. My mom gets diagnosed with dementia, you know, so that was a big hit, and I had to be her caregiver and take care of her, and I wasn't ready to put her in a home, so, you know, and then on top of that, COVID hits, and I would just make sure she's fed, her pills, and I would go in my room, and I would just get loaded, and that's how it was for the next few years, you know. At this point in my drinking, I'm isolated. I'm completely isolated from the world. I just go to work, come back home, work, come back home, and that's it. You know, I'm completely isolated. I don't really want to be around people, and that's how I was. You know, again, you know, my sister stopped talking to me for a very long time, you know, because I was embarrassing her. I would just get really wasted at her parties and birthday parties and get-togethers. I wouldn't arrive. My nephews would football games. I wouldn't show up. And if I did, I was wasted, you know, and I would leave, not even before the game. So I missed out on a lot of stuff, you know. The moment I wanted to stop, it was the moment after mom passed. You know, grandma passed. When grandma passed away, it really took a different turn, and she was gone, and I was completely alone, you know, and I didn't want to, I knew I was going to die if I continued, right? I knew I was going to die because I was doing the thing all over again, you know, and I'm just getting sick and tired of being sick and tired, you know. I'm hanging out in motels, going to Victorville, going to Burbank, and doing all kinds of things, and again, waking up and coming to, and I'm like, what am I doing all over again, you know? I'm almost 40. I'm doing this again and again and again. I'm tired of it. I come to you guys. you know? The many times that I would tell myself, it's just going to be one. It's just going to be two. And it was never like that. Endlessly, it was never like that. You know? And it came to you guys. And just little by little, I would come back, and I would come back, and I would just listen, and I would leave again, and I would come back. And it was like that for like months, 6 months, 8 months. You know? I remember this man named John at the grave. He was like, you're going to get my number. Here's a big book. And you're going to read it. You're going to call me tomorrow. Hell no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to listen to you. I don't know who you are, and I don't like you, you know? Because I'm focused on the differences, right? You don't look like me. Why would I trust you, you know? So my walls are up. I never called them. I never did. But again, little by little, I just kept coming back, you know? And I kept hearing these little slogans, like, keep coming back, 90 meetings in 90 days, you know, let go and let God. I didn't understand what God was, because the God that I was raised with was a punishing God. You know, my grandma used to say, Dios castiga, which God punishes. She used to make, when I used to be misbehave, she'll put me, and I'll get on my knees, put my hands up on the wall, and do like 20 Padre Nuestros, which is the Lord's Prayer. Hated that prayer. I really did. I didn't want to say it. You know, and if I didn't say it right, if I stutter, plah, she hit me with the bell. So my relationship with God was completely disconnected, because when I see that, reminds me of that. Not until I get really into the book, I met my sponsor at a meeting. So I was going to different meetings, and I met my sponsor there. And at the time, it was there was something about him. You know, he was very reserved, very quiet, but like, I can relate. He looked like me. You know what I mean? Like, there was resemblance, right? And there was something that attracted me about him, right? He was quiet. He wasn't loud. And as I was walking out, he approached me. He's like, get my number. And like, it wasn't just writing his number on a piece of paper. It's like, get your phone out. I'm going to put my number, your phone, and hit me up, you know? A couple weeks later, like, you know, again, and at this point, I'm having like, days of sobriety without alcohol, but I'm still smoking the weed, right? Because I'm still not ready, right? I don't have a problem with weed. It's with the alcohol. And I'm looking for this meeting. It's a speaker meeting. I'm in the parking lot. I'm just like, I have this outdated directory, and I show up to this meeting, and there's no one there. Parking lot is completely empty. And I was just like, fuck it. I'm gonna go pick up. There's a liquor store down the street. I'm just gonna go pick up. You know. And for whatever reason, this man's name kept coming up. So I picked up the phone and I called him. I said, hey, I'm going through it right now. He's like, where are you at? I'm like, looking for this meeting. It's called High Desert, you know? And I was on JN 20th. He goes, oh yeah, that meeting moved to a new church. We're down on K, you know? And it was wild to talk about that now, you know? So I'm at the old location, ready to pick up, you know? But I picked up the phone. Was that odd, or was that God, right? You know, I don't know, man. I know that wasn't me, because I'm not the kind of person that picks up the phone and calls another alcoholic for help, right? You know, so he talked to me, and by then, you know, we talked, and then by then it was already like 10 o'clock, and he's like, how are you feeling now? I go, I feel a little better, you know? I feel like, he was like, you're getting closer to another 24 hours, you know, we'll talk tomorrow, you know? And that began the journey, right? The next day he called me, and we talked. He goes, I want you to come on Sunday, and I want to introduce you to a couple guys, and met, you know, Mike, and I met Dylan, and met Jimmy, and got everybody's phone numbers, and got involved. You know, he's like, hey, you know, we show up early for fellowship. We help with the setup, and da da da. And I, you know, and at this time he's not my sponsor yet, but he's like, you should get a commitment. What is that? Commitment. He said, reason to come to the meetings. All right. Cool. A week later, he asked me like, did you get a sponsor yet? He's like, yeah, I actually want to talk to you about that. Can you be my sponsor? So scared to say those words, right? It's like, yeah. And now a new set of rules. You're going to call me every day at this time, And we're going to get together on Mondays and work on the book, you know, and start working the steps, you know. I don't know what it was, but I know that I was just tired of living the way I was living, and I surrendered to the program. And it started with that sponsor. It started with the room. It started with whatever he asked me to do, I was willing to do. So for the first time in my life, I was willing to do something different, to live one day at a time. I don't want to go back to that. You know, so I don't even know what I'm getting myself into, but I really don't want to go back to that. You get to read the doctor's opinion, and I'm just like, whoa, this speaks loud. This explains why I can't stop when I have one drink. Why is it when I pick up, like, why is it when I'm at work, I'm obsessing over it? I'm thirsty, right? And I'm already planning my drink without having my drink. It says right there, you know? Just the steps, you know, the steps to begin, right? And that power greater than ourselves. I had to tap into a power that was not me. I had to stop playing God and start picking a God of my understanding. My own understanding. I don't get to comprehend that until I get into the book. What do you mean my own understanding? It could be anything. And it did not have to be my sponsor's God. He's never imposed, it has to be this way. Your God. We did the conception of God, and I described it. He goes, that's what you're going to hang on to. You're going to do these prayers. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm doing as suggested, right? He's telling me to do these things. The third step prayer, you know, thinking of others. Gratitude list, right? Simple little things, right? Twitches, right? I'm tweaking my morning routine, right? Being grateful to wake up on a clean bed. Being grateful to have a job, to have a roof over my head. So it's just a little things that I'm grateful for. There's the prayer, maybe pray on my knees, you know? I was like, okay, you know? But already something's working within me, right? Something's already working, right? And I keep coming back because he wasn't holding me hostage. Alcohol held me hostage for 2 decades. He wasn't. The door was open. You want to walk out? Walk out, you know? I kept coming back, and I kept, you know, calling him at 3 o'clock and checking in, and da da da. You know, and then we get into the work, right? We start cleaning house, you know, cleaning house, and these are things that I just never thought I was going to talk about, you know. And by the time I get these lists and done, and the fifth step, and I was so scared. I was going to say this to another person, you know, and I remember. Just so nervous on that day. And I just remember towards the end of it, I was just crying. Not out of sadness, out of this relief. It is off my chest. You know, my sponsor's just so understanding and loving. He's like, this doesn't scare me. This is nothing. I've been through a couple of those things, and I know people who have. That's nothing, you know? And then doing that meditation where humbly asking to remove our shortcomings, right? You know, and at this point, I'm ready to give away these character defects to a power greater than myself, right? And something happens now that is not coming from outside. It's coming from within now, you know? And these tears are just coming out. I'm just weeping, you know? And I get to, and then we start getting into more action, right? More action, right? And everything that we've done, and we list them, we put them on paper, you know? And a lot of them were living amends, you know? Especially the people that have been through so much, you know? And it's just little acts of kindness, thinking of others, right? Thinking of others, right? And so the commitment part, you know, I remember he puts me on in front of the church, and I had to be a greeter. And I'm like, what's the whole point of being a greeter? I don't get that. You're greeting the other person. Make sure they're welcome. Oh, so we're like, welcoming the other people, being nice to other people. He goes, yeah, okay. I just kept saying okay along the way. I stopped fighting it. Okay. Everything, I asked a question, he explained, okay. You know? I have no fight in me or trying to prove anything, right? I can't outsmart the program. I can't outsmart none of this, especially you guys. You can't bullshit a bullshitter, right? You know? Can't do it no more. The act is up, right? These direct demands, you know, these direct demands were something, you know. That woman that raised me, grandma, you know, I love her to death. And then, you know, she wasn't around and I couldn't do that direct demands to her in person. God, I wish I could. God, I wish that woman was still alive to see me sober today. You know? Because that's what she wanted. She didn't want it. She goes, I see my husband in you. My husband, my grandfather was an alcoholic too, you know. And she's like, you remind me so much of him. Not just because you look like him, but you act like him when you're drinking. You know? So I made the letter. I made this letter, right? And I picked the place. At the time, it was a place that we used to hang out. And I used to take her. It was a St. Abby's, church. It's out in, what is it? Like
Valermo.
Okay, yeah. Beautiful place. Because you're going from the desert, you're going there, and it's like an oasis, basically, right? You got the pond, the trees, it's so calming energy. She loved going there, you know, her last years, you know? And I did the written amends there, right? And I just prayed, and I read this letter out loud. And again, I am crying because I am like, I feel bad. All the things, you know? Because I was like, how is that meant to even happen? She's not here. Something was there for sure, you know? And I see these ducks, you know, coming along, and they probably wanted food, but I didn't have no food for them. I don't know what it was, you know? But I felt this common energy, you know? And I'm just crying reading this letter. It's like 4 pages long. I'm reading this letter, and I'm just crying, crying, crying. I had a picture of her. I had my hydro flask, and I had my letter, you know? And everything that I put her through, you know? And how do I make it up to her? But not treating people like that, right? By being respectful, but not stealing, but not lying, right? From now on, I'm going to do these things, right? Because I know that's what you want me to do, right? And I'm so sad. I'm crying. He's like, how do you... My sponsor calls, how do you feel? I'm like, oh, this is so sad. So heavy, right? We're Cuban, and we listen to a lot of salsa music. And there's this singer named Willie Colon. He's Puerto Rican, right? Very famous salsa singer. And there was... it was Willie Colon and John LaJoie, right? There's a movie about them. It's called El Cantante with Mark Anthony. It's a crazy movie. It's about addiction, and it's just a crazy movie. But yeah, so this song comes up on the radio on my playlist, and it was like a random playlist, right? And the song was like, "No llores por mí, don't cry for me. Do not cry. If I die, don't cry for me. Instead, I want you to live life happily. I want you to dance, you know." And that's something my grandma would say. So I'm just like, is that my mom telling me to not, she doesn't want to see me sad and just to like live life, you know? I don't know. Again, odd or God, right? Right there, right? So I took it as a message, right? A random song comes up, you know, of one of her favorite singers. As I would do more of these amends with family members and friends, you know, I start feeling... I feel good by making things right, you know? And I'm not as miserable as before. I'm not thinking about suicide as before. I'm not thinking about hating you because, you know, I hated everybody, you know? I start feeling very comfortable within my skin without the need of using, of taking anything that affects me from the neck up. I'm comfortable. I'm having these more of these moments where I'm comfortable within myself. You know? How is that even possible? Through the program. The fellowship welcomes you, right? You feel part of, right? You're connected, right? Right? But the real recovery is through the program of the 12 steps. You know? And this daily maintenance, I have to repeat, rinse and repeat every single day. This is a matter of life and death for me, and I have to do this over and over again every single day, you know? And all I can do is worry about today, you know, because my mind is going to be loud again thinking about tomorrow, and I just have to stop. And I have to center myself, do a serenity prayer, you know? Take a step back. Do another three-step prayer, you know? Am I controlling the show again? Am I controlling again? Am I being nice to get my way? Am I being kind? You know? Because I like to people please. Because I want you to like me. You know? So, but these things, I don't know about these things about myself until I get into the work. And this thing just begins to stand out. Oh, these are character defects that are going to creep up. I have to stay vigilant in my recovery, right? Right? I have to stay vigilant in order to stay recovered, you know? And this whole process, it just shows me that, okay, we look at these things that pop up and we take that action, right? I'm not going to act upon it, so I'll do the opposite, right? Think of others, work with others, call my sponsor, and repeat, right? And again, turning over that will. Today's life is really good, you know, it's really good. You know, my relationships are good for the most part, not all of them. You know, relationships are another thing, you know, and but I'm able to communicate without fighting. I'm able to communicate things and not put the blame on other people. I used to, you know, I'm glad that I have a support system that I can talk to about these things, you know. And I try, you know, applying these principles in all our affairs, you know, and it's not, I do well AA. In the rooms, I'm a superstar, right? You see, yeah, you're a superstar, right? Like, I do everything right, I'm told, I know what to do, I can pass this test, right? But what about outside, when no one's watching? That's a real test, you know? So I'm constantly being reminded, right? Constantly being reminded, so I find myself being tested. You know, being tested. So I'm gonna be kind. I gotta be generous. I gotta help others in need. I pick up the phone when my phone rings. You know, my relationship with my mother today, with my birth mom, is amazing. She's also in recovery. You know, and the other fellowship. It's like 26 years of recovery. You know, and now I get to understand why she loves sobriety today, you know, and it's amazing. And my relationship, because I got sober and worked the steps, I have a great relationship with my birth mom today. We spit program at each other. We go to conventions. I'm her rock now. She's going through some stuff right now, and she gets to count on me today. It wasn't like that before, you know. Mijo, this is what's going on. I go, I'm listening. You know, I have a great relationship with her. I never imagined. And the only possibility to have a relationship with her is because of this. You know? Yeah. You know, life is good. You know, seeing everybody evolve and recover, you know, and the light come on, you know, and getting to work with others has been a blessing. You know, I get to see these guys just eager to do this thing one day at a time, you know? See people change and get their families back and go back to school, you know? It's amazing, you know? From being a complete isolated person who didn't want to be around anybody, today I'm surrounded by friends and family that are all in here, you know? It's amazing. For those that did not identify as new or under 30 days, welcome. Stick around. Get a sponsor if you don't have one. Get a sponsor. Get connected. Get connected. Change your life, because this is life and death. We don't get second chances out there. It's not. We don't get second chances out there, you know? And just be willing to do something different for you, you know? Because if you don't do this for yourself, how the hell are you going to be a good dad? How the hell are you going to be a good brother, a good son, you know? These are the rewards that we get today because of the program, you know? So, yeah, get a sponsor, get into the big book, work the steps. And we do this one day at a time, guys. That's my story. That's all I got. Thank you for letting me share.